Welcome in, everybody. This is podcast. My name is Dennis Newman. This is my first foyer into podcasting, so bear with me today. We're going to have some fun. I know we're going to have some fun because we've got a great guest for this first one. I mean, this seems like the apropos name to bring in for the first podcast. John Gabriel going to join us here for a couple of minutes, the longtime Magic general manager. He was in New York for a while working with the Knicks. He's back in the Magic front office. Now we'll talk about all that. But John, a good friend from way, way back, and John's going to join us for a few minutes. We'll talk a little Magic basketball. I've been in this, John, for 40 years in radio. This is my first podcast, so it may get a little bumpy, but just have some fun with me.
You know, I offer absolutely no hope, no help whatsoever.
I appreciate that. I really do. This is something, John, you can put on your resume down the road, too, so it's nice to have. You have that going for you. Yeah. All right, John, good to see you. It's just good to see you again. I don't get to see you that much. Once in a while at the arena, once in a while I'll see you out on the NBA road. But thanks for coming in. As I said, one of my all-time favorites. And I'll tell you what, I was looking at this. You weren't the first Magic employee ever, but you were pretty close, weren't you?
I was the first one on the basketball side, Dennis. Pat was here with an administrative assistant. We were a block off Church Street over a delicatessen. And, the aroma of the soup and the and the sauerkraut would permeate the building, and you'd be starving by 10:30. And there was three of us, and then slowly we added one staff member at a time till we outgrew that little office space. But it was a wonderful experience, and I can't say enough wonderful things and great things about one of my best friends, Pat Williams, who gave me the opportunity in Philly when I left the Sixers, Dennis. I was doing a little bit of everything, and that's the way it was back in the day. And I look forward to sharing some of those experiences with you, which led me here to Orlando.
Yeah, and you talked about the Philadelphia connection with Pat Williams, and there was a strong connection, and actually in a lot of ways still is, with this team in the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm. But you mentioned Pat. Matty Gukas, of course, came over time. Jack Swope was in the front office for years for the Magic. Tom Stirner, I know, a good friend of yours from way back. Mm-hmm. So there is that strong Philadelphia connection. I want to start a little bit with the way you started in basketball, because I've always thought this was such a great story. You played basketball at Cutstown. You're a ball player, but you get out of college and you go, I guess you're in the landscape business in the Philly area, or in that area, mowing lawns, but you want to get back in the business, and you just persevere until you find a spot.
Let me try to give you the abbreviated version. But as soon as I got done college, they had offered me the assistant coach and then a head coaching job at Kutztown University, and I was beat out by Bobby Valvano, Jim's brother, for the job. Yeah. And then I wanted to stay in the area, so I became an assistant coach there at the university for a few years, and then decided to leave the little town of Kutztown and go to the Jersey Shore, where I started a landscaping business to keep things going. My brother worked at Atlantic City Racetrack, so at the end of the day at 5 p.m., I took off the jeans and the boots, and I put on a suit and worked at the racetrack at Atlantic City for my brother as a placing judge. And at the end of the night, they had me do the in-house commercials, because that was the beginning of simulcasting of sports events for betting and gambling, which was mainly horse racing. So they needed a lot of more video product. So I wrote the commercials for them, and that was my routine. And every day I'd stop at the Shore Diner in Jersey, in South Jersey, and I'd call a guy by the name of John Nash and a guy by the name of Pat Williams to try to get an introduction to them, because basketball was still in my heart. And the woman that answered the phone, the executive assistant, she just never would put me through. They were always too busy. So I must have stopped for my lunch there at least 30 times before I got through. And I did finally get through and came on as a box office representative, making maybe $2.10 an hour. That's $2.10 an hour. And eventually made my way into the video department. The gentleman was doing the Flyers hockey, but he didn't like doing the Sixers basketball video. So I asked him if I could do it. And to make a long story short, by the time I left the Sixers to join Pat, I was the director of broadcasting. I was an assistant coach on the bench. I was the advanced scout. I was the collegiate scout. And I still wrote the commercials for every TV commercial and all the radio and TV drop-ins. So Pat needed somebody that wasn't really great at one thing, but was good at a lot of small things. And that ended up being my ticket to come down here in 87.
And I guess we should mention, you talked about making call after call, trying to get on with the 76ers. But the receptionist that you mentioned, her name was Dorothy, and she plays a little part of your life as you go through life in the last 40 years.
Before I packed my bag and headed south, I made it a point that Dorothy and I would get married. and it wasn't out of gratitude. It was out of love, believe me. We came down here and started our adult life in the Orlando area.
Wonderful lady, Dorothy. All right, let's go from there. Actually, you mentioned you get on with the Sixers, and I love this quote. You mentioned John Nash, terrific guy, but he had a great quote that he still tells, I think, when he talks about you. He says, yeah, we got Moses Malone and we got John Gabriel about the same time and started to go the right way for the Sixers. So you get on, and you enjoy pretty good success there. I mean, in 83, doesn't matter what you're doing, I don't know at that time if you're out of the box office or not, but you win a world championship, the NBA champion 76ers. What was that like, John? Because you look back now, you've been in the NBA for what, almost 40 years?
Yeah.
You've never won another one, and a lot of us have never won one, have been in the business a long time, but you won in 83, and I'm sure that's a memorable year.
Yeah, it was quite easy, Dennis. You just get Moses Malone, who was the most dominant center in the world, and you put a ring on, in June. But we know that there's a lot more that goes into that. There are a lot of heartbreaks for that team against rival Celtics, Lakers teams. That team lost one playoff game in the playoff series, which is close to being a record still to this day. But, I was just fortunate enough to, without a doubt, with being with great people from the start, people that were willing to give me a chance. One of my first opportunities to show them I knew a little bit about basketball is I would do scouting reports on my own via videotape. That's back in VHS days. And I'd put audio on it and to cue the coaches up, I'd say, here comes the four down play, four series of the four down play. And they were amazed that there was audio on it. And who was speaking on that audio? And the coaches and the players were afraid of coaxial cable. They thought there was electricity in it. So they had me come hook up all their VCRs, and I never told them any different.
All right. You know, you make that decision when late 80s, I think Matty Gukas decides to, well, Pat Williams first, and then Matty Gukas decides to come to Orlando. The Magic have arrived in Central Florida. You make that decision to leave Philadelphia and come join an expansion organization in the NBA. How difficult was that at the time, John?
Well, you know, it was a situation where I've always had a love affair with the state of Florida. I had an aunt and uncle that lived in Miami Beach. And it was a gas to go visit them as a youngster. So I was fond of the area. Pat asked me, he says, Gabe, if you do take the job, what do you want to be? What do you want your title to be? And I thought to myself, Dennis, I said, do I want to drive the car or do I want to make the car? And I said, I think I'll do both. So I became the director of pro personnel and assistant coach. So I sat on the bench for 3 years. As I did in Philadelphia with the Magic, with Matty, and then eventually B. Hill. And Pat was so gracious in giving me opportunities of running the collegiate scouting and pro scouting and free agency, our expansion draft. He gave me a lot of opportunity there, which I'll forever be grateful.
Yeah, I met you in 1989. I can remember that, John Gabriel. I mean, you literally were doing everything, scouting, assistant coach, you were planning. We were running camps or training camp, I guess it was, out at Disney. I remember you had a big part in that. I mean, as you look back on those years, fond years in your career?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we finalized what type of blue should be in the blue logo, what stuff was going to look like. There was no arena when I first got down here. Trying to work on that, trying to get the skyboxes somewhere in the first arena down close enough so you could see the court. all types of small challenges, but things that you never really outside of the industry in any position you're in, to get to touch it up with every facet of the pro sport game was really special.
You know, and then you kind of transition slowly into more front office stuff, working with Pat, involved with everything he's doing. And boy, I look back at the decisions you were involved in, the big one, obviously, in 92, taking Shaq, which wasn't, you know, that's a no-brainer, I would think, at the time. We all knew that. The next year, though, was not. In 93, you're in the front office with everybody, and you guys make a decision. You need a power forward. That's really the place that you need to fill. Chris Webber's there. You take him, but you trade him on draft night. You send him out to Golden State for Penny Hardaway and three number ones. How, as you look back, and I know you've thought about this, talked about it for years, but how do you remember that night and how that transpired?
Well, over the years since that event, Dennis, and I've heard a variety of people explain how they made that decision for me, which is probably true, because we did things as a team back then. We were a small operation, not the way we are today. So we did have everyone's input. But I recall sitting with Pat, sitting with Brian, and trying to figure out, you know, what would be the most effective, number one, what would be the most effective way to play, and to go inside out and to have the biggest player at two positions, Penny at point guard and Shaquille at center, on top of the talent base that they had, that seemed like the right thing to do. But, you know, teams were getting bigger and bigger. So it was also exciting to think of Webber next to Shaquille and how that would work. It came down to sitting with the DeVosses in a room in the old arena. And I asked to be excused and went next door to see Pat. I said, Pat, you know what's on my plate, and their ownership is right next door. Help me. He said, go with your heart, Gabe. And I walked back in the room and said, it's Hardaway and the three number ones. And that was the big part of that deal was Pat Williams acquiring three first-round draft picks from Golden State on top of getting the pick later in the draft, the third pick. So it was almost four. And I asked him, I said, hey, Pat, how did you get four draft picks? He said, I asked for six. So that was a very, very teachable moment.
And you look back on that decision, probably one of the best decisions in the history of this franchise. Winning becomes easy. We know that. The next 3 years, you win 50, 57, 60 games, trip to the finals in 95. I mean, things are good. You become officially the GM in 96. And then, as you know, and this is an up-and-down business, and probably the toughest day of your life as a GM, you find out Shaquille O'Neal decides, you know, I'm going to Los Angeles. I've heard a lot of people describe you during that time, Gabe, as they've never seen John Gabriel as down as that day when you realized what was happening. Can you go back and kind of take us through the 24 hours or just the moment you realize this is real? He's not going to stay here. He's going to L.A.
Yeah, you know, there's been all types of probably the question I've got the most right after that and for years to come was, did he really want to be here? Did Shaquille really want to be here? And there was arguably a little bit of fault on both sides. We were, Dennis, 6 years out of the gate? I mean, we were a young franchise, wet behind the ear. The DeVosses had not really, this was probably the first big deal for them financially from a personnel standpoint. And, we could have just jumped in and signed him right off the bat. He wanted more money than Alonzo was getting. And at that time, we thought we had better short-term deals to offer to increase the value of our offer. But it was a tough time. The organization's timing was perfect for certain people, not so much for me, in that the day he left, they named me general manager. So I got the fun task of facing our fans and facing, I remember it was in the RDV Sportsplex where I faced the staff and had to try to explain to them what happened. And it was hard to recover.
And you fight on. I mean, winning's not easy. Shaq's gone, but you're competitive. I mean, you win 45 games that year. You win 41, I think, the next year. A lockout year, had a good year at 33-17. And then that 99-2000 season, such a memorable year for the Magic. A lot of people call it the heart and hustle year. But you just amass a team of competitors, not really all-stars, but fighters. Is that team... You know, do you remember that? Does it mean as much to you, Gabe, as it does, I think, to so many Magic fans we talked to?
Yeah, you know, that was such a special team. I remember the directors of marketing coming down to me, who were friends, as the GM, and saying, you know, we need to come up with a tagline for next year. They said, who are our, you know, on that Heart and Hustle team, who are our stars? I said, well, we really don't have anybody that's going to make the All-Star team, and we don't really have anybody that's going to make the All-Tournament team. The all NBA team, so we're probably going to work real hard, have a lot of heart and hustle, and that's what stuck, and that's what stuck, and that group was so special. You know, give me 12 guys in the last year of their contract, and I'll give you a pretty competitive team, and that most of those guys, except for I think Daryl and Bo, maybe Amich, were in the last years of their deal, and we got the absolute most out of them, and the coaching staff did a tremendous job.
Yeah, year that I don't think any of us will ever forget. And then we move on. I mean, that year, that summer of 2000, game, I think of all the things I know you've done as a general manager, to me, that was incredible, what you did that summer, the moves you made just to put yourself in position, and then to sign Tracy McGrady, to sign Grant Hill. And I know there was another guy that possibly could make it even better. It didn't work out, but what a summer you had just making deals. I mean, let alone McGrady and Hill, but the deals you made to get yourself in place to do the big ones.
Yeah, Scott Herring, who was originally the VP of finance, was my assistant general manager at that point. And we really worked well together. And collectively, we made 57 transactions in 15 months between signing guys, trading them, aggregating them, combining them with other guys. Most of our phone calls to players were, Robert, this is John Gabriel from the Magic. We just traded for you, but don't pack a bag because you're going somewhere else and not Orlando, I'm pretty sure. And we did that quite a few times, so hopefully we didn't displace too many people's livelihoods. But it was, you know, we were really close. We got a commitment from Duncan after Grant and him had left. We had Tracy on hold in the background, as a priority to fall back to. And Scott came up with the idea that, you know, I think we can get all three, which would have been the beginning of the big three back in the day.
And there's no question, and you hear a lot of different stories over the years, but you were there. There's no question in your mind when Duncan left Orlando, you felt like he's coming back. He wants to be part of this.
Jeff Austin is a pretty famous sports agent, represented David Robinson, and he verified that David got on a private plane when he heard Tim was going to leave. A teammate of Tim's on the Spurs, David flew back and talked him out of it. Otherwise, we thought we had all three.
And to move on, I think it was either that summer, Gabe, possibly the summer before, but you're named the NBA Executive of the Year. I mean, great honor for your position at the time, the best executive for the season in that year. But you know, I guess, you win an honor, it's great. It's great that you're appreciated by your peers, by the NBA. But you know, I mean, in this league, in professional sports, it really has nothing to do with what you've done. It's all about what you're doing and what you are going to do.
Yeah, you're right. And it was, you know, I don't like it to go without mention that one of our bigger acquisitions was the hiring of Doc Rivers out of the broadcast booth in San Antonio to bring him on and start his career, and the value he would have as a coach in recruiting. Doc would also win Coach of the Year that same year, Dennis. And Daryl Armstrong would do something that has never been done in the history of the NBA. He would win Sixth Man and I think Most Improved Player in the same season. And I saw when I walked in the building today, him holding both those trophies. So it was a love fest of success. And but, you know, we had some pretty talented players on the up-and-coming team. So you're right. that wasn't the end of the line.
You know, Gabe, as you look back, of all the players you've been involved with in this league over the years, is there one or two that stand out to you that just have made an impression, and maybe not so much on the basketball floor, but just an impression on you as an individual? And I know it's hard. It's almost like choosing between your children.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
But do you remember any of them that just really stand out to you?
You know, you love the one that's not home yet, or the one that doesn't feel better.
Yeah.
You know, good till they feel better. But so I wouldn't want to exclude anyone. But you know, there was guys that were challenges like a young Shaquille. Mm. You know, early on, and wanting to be the man, even with a talented team around him. But it was fun. It was a fun experience seeing him learn. But the two guys that I thought really anchored us were Darrell Armstrong and Bo Outlaw. And remember, they played for Chuck Daly, and that's the lockout year where we, I think, end up winning the East or coming in second in the conference. And then he really did a good job, those guys, in putting pressure on the other team. And I remember clubs would come up to me and go, "You guys run a wonderful full court defense." I said, "Wait a minute, Chuck doesn't have a full court defense." It was Bo and Darrell guarding 90 feet up and down the floor.
Yeah.
And I think they were a big help to launching Doc's success early on too, until we got the superstars, and then we made trades to try to beef up our draft picks, and we let both of them go.
Just that infectious energy. You leave Orlando in the mid-90s. You land in New York. You spend a few years with the Knicks. How was that for you, working in New York? A big difference, I'm sure, from the market of Orlando to metropolitan New York City.
Well, I got a taste for 2 years with the Portland Trailblazers right before that.
Yeah.
They would call me and say, "Come on in, we're having a meeting." And from Florida to Portland's not a short trip. So that lasted two or three years. And then my dad was a Brooklyn boy, so it was pretty exciting to go to the Garden. I got to experience probably more general managers than I care to say. Donnie Walsh would be a Hall of Fame guy. Mm. Glenn Grunwald, Steve Patterson, who's still there now. And my last experience with a general manager was in New York with Phil Jackson, who will go down as one of the greatest coaches, one of them of all time, having been to the NBA Finals 13 times. But I found him fascinating. I thought his work as an administrator, though it wasn't reflected on the court, his work as an administrator was really interesting and fun.
Yeah, that's interesting you mention that. Phil Jackson, when you're one-on-one with Phil working, I mean, I've always heard he's just a terrific one-on-one communicator. Did you find that?
I interviewed him in 99 to take the head coaching job. Really, back then, Dennis, there wasn't the movement of communication, Skype and Facebook and tweet didn't exist. So it was easy to keep it under wraps. But we had Patino agreeing to be the coach here. We had Phil, who was thinking about it. And we had Chuck Daly, who wanted the job. And so I got to know him a little bit better then. But Phil's the type of guy that catch you off guard. We were in New York recruiting a player in my third year with Phil, and we were sitting at dinner getting ready to make our move at midnight, which is the free agent drop of the hat to start. And Phil asked me, "How good were you in grade school in basketball?" And just to break the ice, I said, this guy's like, you know, he's God among NBA people. And he's asking me how I did in the Mighty Mites at St. Vincent de Paul. So, you know, he's a deep thinker, can communicate with anybody. And, you know, I've always said it takes just as much talent as a coach to coach a talented team, you know, as the struggles that come with working with a team that you've got to support up. And he was able to, you know, through the Michael Jordan era, Scottie Pippen, his days with the Lakers, he was able to manage those egos and their time like no one else has really has done in recent time.
All right, we move on, John. In 2010, your world gets rocked. You're diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. We all know a formidable foe, but you're fighting, and you continue to fight. You've been a fighter your entire life. How is this different for you as you fight this battle?
Well, once you get through the initial disbelief that you have it, and you ask the doctors, you know, the tough questions like, am I going to dance at my daughter's wedding? What's my life expectancy? You know, I felt sorry for myself for a period of time, accepted what I had. But maybe sometimes I can think of it as a sort of a blessing in that it gave me a course of action. A lot of people walk through life every day and are looking for direction. And what am I really going to be good at? When I grow up, when will I be happy with my goals and objectives for myself personally or with my spouse? Within my family, I know what I have to do. I'm utilizing whatever platform I have left in the league to bring sponsorship and awareness to our Parkinson's Association of Central Florida. And we have a walk right now every April at Crane's Roost. And we've raised, just in 6 years, we've raised over $1 million to go to Central Florida programs, research, and just to help others from an advisement standpoint. So that's what I found to be my passion. And I hope to take, as the newly elected president, I'm hoping to take, you know, the Parkinson's Association of Central Florida, you know, to the next level.
It's so good to hear, and it's so good to see you doing that. And I know that group is blessed to have you now as their leader. And you're also still in basketball. You're here in Orlando. You're working as an advisor for the Magic. Again, really doing the same thing you've done throughout your NBA career. You're just trying to assemble talent, and win basketball games.
Yeah, you know, as you get a little bit older, and when you're an advisor, it's not a full-time office job. So you want to try to make a difference. You want to try to add something that, you know, through your past experiences with the club currently, but. You know, I asked the people in New York when I shared with them that I had PD. I said, you know, I haven't. I just want you to know it. So if you see me stumbling around or shaking a little bit, you know, you don't have to learn from someone else. And they said, somebody stood up and said, is there anything we can do for you? I said, there is. Treat me like you always did. So I'm still a dad to my kids. I'm still a husband to Dorothy. I'm still a friend to my friends. And as I said before, I'm still a damn pretty good damn basketball player.
Yes, you are.
I can beat anybody one-on-one as long as they have Parkinson's or over 60 years old.
Which includes me. Players, over the years, Gabe, have they changed? Are they different today than they were in the late 70s, early 80s in Philadelphia with the Sixers?
Pitino had said when he was coaching that he feels like, for the most part, the kids are the same. They may act differently. They may have different attributes. They may be staring at a phone. The one thing that does change, because the kids are kids, the one thing that does change is the music. But
how about the game? Has the game changed for you?
It really has. I decided about 9 years ago. It was actually during a time when we were putting the team together for Mike D'Antoni in New York, when Mike was the Knicks coach. And it was sort of if I'm not mistaken, one of the first times that the Knicks went back to the playoffs in quite a while. And we had cultured our scouts to look for one thing in particular, and that's perimeter shooting. And that's when three-point shooting, you know, back about 8 years ago, was really starting to come on. And, you know, it worked. It worked. There was only one team that had more players that shot over 35% from three than the Knicks, and that was the World Championship Spurs. So that was our MO. So for me, I decided a while back, if a guy can't shoot, I'm sorry, he gets pushed to the wayside. You got to be able to shoot the ball.
And I'll segue from that, a final question. We'll ask you about this 2019-2020 version of the Magic. Pretty good bounce last year. You know, you had a good season, get to the playoffs, get a little experience for these guys. Now you're back, and you're trying to get better. What do you see? We open up in a few days against Cleveland, opening night here in Orlando at the Amway Center. How do you look at this version of the Orlando Magic?
I would venture to toss out the last two exhibition games that we played after coming home from our road trip where we won three without Vooch, not only from a scoring standpoint, but from a game perspective, playing inside out, meaning throwing the ball into the center and having it kicked out, is a whole different experience than trying to create on your own where we've struggled to make shots. But, you know, it's just amazing what John Hammond and Jeff Weltman have done with this team. They've taken a group of guys that had minimal trade value in the league. And it's not their fault. It comes with the territory of losing that people don't value your players. And he's made them extremely valuable. And that's important to continuing to not necessarily sign new players, but in trade possibilities. The fact that John and Jeff have turned things around here in a short period of time is pretty remarkable.
Johnny Gabriel, I appreciate it so much, you being part of this first podcast. Thanks for your time. I will always remember you, John. To me, you've always the trait I love about John Gabriel is from the outset, years ago, you treated the custodians just the same way you treated the guys in the front office, and that's noticed. To me, that's a mark of a good man. I appreciate that. True gentleman, and thanks for stopping by today.
That's the nicest thing you could say. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, John. John Gabriel, good to be with you guys. We'll see you later right here. We'll